Welcome to When They Popped. Let's rewind to a simpler time together and dive deep into the music, movement, and mania behind our favorite Y2K celebrities and trends. Hosted by Kelsey and Mary, it's time for another episode of When They Popped.
Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
And today we are bringing you back to the bowels of the MTV archives to talk about our favorite reality shows. I mean, one thing about me, I was an MTV addicted tween, dust teen. And along with Bravo, I credit MTV with pioneering the reality TV space. So today's episode is dedicated to two shows that these were the shows that, like, if I saw that they were on TV Guide, like if they were on that revolving, here's what's on in the next 30 minutes, I could not, would not change a channel. I had to watch it. So Mary and I each picked two of our favorite shows, and we're going to walk you, our wonderful listeners, through some of our favorite episodes that are just ingrained in our memories forever. Are you ready?
I am ready for it.
Are you ready for it?
The Eras Tour is back, so I'm on theme.
Oh my God, it is. Wait, tonight.
It's like right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
It's November 3rd. It's November 9th. Wait, also the Mean Girls trailer. Oh my God. Sidebar. I thought it was a musical.
I thought it was like on Broadway.
So it was on Broadway, and that's why Renee Rapp is resuming her role as Regina George. But I thought that this was Mean Girls the musical, the movie.
Oh.
And there was no music in that trailer. It just seemed like a redo of our beloved Mean Girls.
I'm petrified of it because it's probably just going to be terrible. But I hope it's not. I hope
how
it's not.
How did we get here from, November 3rd. It's October 3rd. Okay, sorry. I was like, wait, how did we get here from
So we'll have to see. I mean, I'm sure we'll end up seeing it and we'll have some thoughts, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Dude, so it comes out around my birthday and I'm already planning a Mean Girls birthday.
Ooh, right on theme. I love it.
I gotta be there. Okay, sorry. So anyways, back to our episode. And as always, before we jump into our episode, quick disclaimer that we do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or performances in this episode. The purpose of these clips is for commentary and critique. I'm going to go first. I picked My Super Sweet 16. Sweet 16. Gonna spread my wings. Sweet 16. It's my chance to shine. Sweet 16. Sweet 16. That iconic intro to Hilary Duff's aptly named Sweet 16. Because imagine being 15 years old and recording a studio album and heading to write a song about turning 16. Yes, Hilary, you really do discover there's so much more to life at 16. So I have to say, before this show, I didn't realize that Sweet 16s were like a thing. They just weren't a big deal where I grew up. And like, I'd been to some pretty lit bar and bat mitzvahs, but that was way more common than a big 16th birthday blowout for me. So Mary, I want to know, were there any like big Sweet 16 parties? Like, were they a thing at your school?
I mean, I guess, but like not to the level of what we saw here. I mean, oh, yeah. I went go-karting for my sweet 16th birthday.
So wait, that's so cute.
Yes. And I got to have, it was co-ed and that was a big deal and all the boys came. And so that was my big sweet 16.
But do you remember what you wore?
Yes, I do. I can picture it. I had a birthday crown on. And jean shorts and this like sweatshirt that like the guy I had a crush on at the time gave me. Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was like my big outfit for that.
I remember when like picking out a hoodie was like the peak of fashion.
Or when a guy gave you a hoodie. That was the best thing.
And it smelled like their Axe body spray.
Yes. Oh, I can picture it. Oh my God. I want to go back.
I don't think I would ever go back to being 16. I was just so lost and confused and I couldn't. We'll get there about the boys being 16, because there's one episode that I was like, how does this girl have this confidence? So let's rewind a little bit and talk about the premise of this show. So My Super Sweet 16 premiered on MTV on January 18th, 2005. I was a mere 14 years old, but I was like a moth to a flame, man. I was instantly obsessed with it. So each episode was dedicated to a coming of age celebration, a sweet 16, a quinceañera. They eventually expanded to 21st birthdays and other big parties. But the OG show was really just about 15-year-olds planning a 16-year-old birthday party. But these were not your typical run-of-the-mill iParty decorations. These were such lavish celebrations at the most exclusive nightclubs. There were hundreds of kids and also usually cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. This was like full-blown, crazy rich Asian-style parties for mostly young women from super affluent families. So in almost every episode, one of these rather spoiled girls would say, "Money is no object to me." And it's like, what? Like, girl, you are 15. What I loved about this show is that it would document all the drama throughout the planning process, from building the guest list to the invitations, which they always chose to hand out at school just to be super exclusionary of everyone else. Like, bitch, I know you can just text people. There were unlimited amounts of tears, tantrums over the most like inane details. And like, listen, I planned a wedding. I know what it's like to freak over tablecloths not being ironed, because I did freak out over that. But these freakouts are way crazier. And then we'd finally get a front row seat to the party itself, which usually culminated in this larger than life car reveal, because who doesn't get a brand new luxury vehicle on their 16th birthday? So the kids were usually gifted like a Benz or a Range Rover, and they had that like big fat bow on it, like in a holiday commercial. Jealousy. The unrealistic expectations this thrust upon a cohort of 14, 15-year-olds. So sometimes the tantrums and meltdowns would be fueled by the car moment specifically. Oh my God, this one girl, I forget her name, but she cried and screamed at her mom. And when I say screamed, I mean she literally was screaming at the top of her lungs.
God.
"I fucking hate you," to her mom in front of everybody at school, because her mom gave her a brand new Lexus at school on her actual birthday and didn't wait to reveal the car to her at her birthday party. And allegedly, it also wasn't the car that she wanted. So this girl turns into Satan him damn self, storming around and screaming all while wearing a tiara. So maybe you and this girl have something in common with your birthday crowds. She's like, "I want to call the party off. You ruined it. You ruined my fucking birthday. I fucking hate you." And then what kills me is she's 15, right? She can't even drive the car that she's upset about being surprised with. So she has to go sit in the car and wait for her mom to get in and drive her home. She can't even drive herself home yet. And God bless this mom. I was waiting to hear her like rip her a new a-hole, like screaming at her, like, "We'll talk about this when we get home." The mom didn't say anything. So messed up. But it's no surprise that the New York Times in 2007 wrote about this show, and they quoted Zena Burns, who's the entertainment director at Teen People. And in this New York Times story, she said, "It's like Jerry Springer for rich kids." I have to agree with this. There is that. And then there was another girl who was like screaming at her friends to make sure that her masquerade party grand entrance was perfect. And she literally goes, "I don't care if you have a bladder infection, you will hold your mask correctly."
I remember that one. I did. Now that is triggering a memory for me, 100%.
Well, I'm glad you have all these memories of the show, because there are some that I want to talk through that I'll never, ever be able to forget. So this show may have been reality television, but due to the sheer scale and cost of these parties, it was anything but reality for so many normal people. So this was obviously by design. Nina Diaz, the show's creator, said that in addition to receiving submissions, she also worked with a casting team who would scour the country and talk with those super exclusive party planners, florists. They were looking for those types of teenagers who would be super showy, be super dramatic for television. And she revealed that each season they would interview about 200 kids, but only 8 or 9 would make the cut. frankly, it was unhinged. So needless to say, I ate it up. I loved it. I couldn't believe how spoiled some of these girls came across and how they would like scream at their parents over like the dumbest things. So most of these episodes would feature regular people. And when I say regular, I mean incredibly affluent, like 1% people, but yes, they were still unknowns. But there were some celebrity episodes that were sprinkled in when the show started to gather some prestige. We got to see Bow Wow, Sean Kingston, Ali and AJ, Chris Brown, Soulja Boy, Teyana Taylor. They all had their birthday parties featured on the show. So we also saw Aaron Reed, who's the son of L.A. Reed, music mogul, like, holy shit. He took 5 months to plan his party. And so he had just moved to New York from Atlanta. So he was like trying to make a name for himself at his new school. He wanted to establish himself as more than just L.A. Reid's son. His invitation was an MP3 player. And at his party, we also got to see some other celebrities because of like the connections that a lot of these kids had through their famous rich parents. So he held his party at Jay-Z's nightclub. And Jermaine Dupri was the DJ. He's like a huge producer. Kanye West performed. Yeah. And Diddy, formerly known as P. Diddy, formerly known as Puff Daddy, who is Aaron's godfather, made an appearance. So Papa Reed clearly pulled some strings. But yes, don't worry, Aaron. You are definitely making a name for yourself. There was one other notable celebrity appearance on the show. Darnell Roy, who is heir to the Sugar Hill Records fortune. He arrived at his party on a camel with Rihanna.
Oh, I remember that one.
Just think about that sentence. Yeah. On a camel with Rihanna. So he went on to become a Bravo celebrity. He's on the first family of hip hop. But like, holy crap. You never knew what you were going to get with these parties is the moral of the story. And there are so many moments from this show that don't even have to do with any of these celebrities that I think about on the daily that I want to share with you. So I remember thinking like, oh my God, these girls are so grown up. They're throwing such grown up parties at nightclubs. But if you didn't spend your time rotting in front of a television like I did during your youth, I'll refresh your memory. So here are my two favorite My Super Sweet 16 episodes. My first one has to be Natalie. So Natalie was a new girl in town. Her storyline was all trying to establish herself as a nice girl, trying to make friends in her new home of La Jolla, California.
Whoa, that's where I'm from. Why don't I know this one?
I was going to ask you, Mary, if you heard about this legendary party.
Wait, I need to look her up.
Natalie grew up living with her aunt and uncle for some reason in Roswell, New Mexico. And apparently didn't enjoy wealth until moving in with her dad in La Jolla. So she's talking about Roswell, New Mexico, like it is a ditch on the side of the street. And she literally was born in a trash can. So she's trying to make friends and make her mark. So she does what any normal teen would do. She threw herself a sweet 16 party that cost $450,000 that was attended by 1,000 guests at one of her dad's nightclubs. Sweet, humble Natalie. She admitted that she was spoiled, but that she deserved everything she had. And she said, if I didn't have money, it would suck. Yeah, Natalie, it would. So we see Natalie go to Vegas to go dress shopping. She gets it custom made. Oh my God, the dress is so funny. It's like a white mini dress. It's like ruched and it has like all these sparkles on it. It looks like BB. Is it Bebe or BB?
I called it BB, but that's probably wrong.
I think it's BB. I mean, Bebe sounds weird, but yeah. I think it's BB too. It was like BB meets Paris Hilton Versace commercial in 2001. Like that was the vibe. She looked amazing. So she buys her dress. It's like $2,000. She gets an $800 manicure with Swarovski crystals. She's like, you know, having the whole nine yards. But Natalie is very excited because two of her friends from her, quote, old life, aka New Mexico, are coming to California to attend the party. But it seems like more than having her close friends there, she's mostly just looking forward to them going home back to New Mexico and telling her old friends and classmates how rich she is now. She was like, yeah, my two friends are coming and they can take pictures and they can bring them back and show everybody in New Mexico because everybody there thinks I'm lying about this party. So there's this one awful scene where one of Natalie's new friends from La Jolla comments on one of Natalie's New Mexico friends' jewelry. So New Mexico girly got her bedazzled jewels from Target for $5 because she's a thrifty queen. And new friend from California was all my stuff is Tiffany. And it was like, oh my God, this is girl on girl hate crimes happening on this show. Oh. I couldn't look away. So now it's the night of the party and she shows up to the party in a Hummer limo. We need to talk about Hummer limos. Pulling over. They were the ultimate prom vehicle. And I want to know why. Aren't they literally a vehicle of war? Like, why do people drive them to Kroger?
I wanted one so bad during this time. They were so trendy. All the cool celebs had a Hummer. I like needed one. And this is obviously before we started caring about the environment. Yes.
Like they came in crazy colors, like the stretch hot pink Hummer limo was like such a flex. Ooh. I went to prom in my boyfriend's Toyota 4Runner. And it was amazing. I loved it. I wouldn't have traded that for anything. So now they're at the party. It's babies in a nightclub. Like that's what it looks like. You just know it smelled like Axe body spray, some Bath and Body Works, Sweet Pea. And there was just so much grinding going on. As an adult watching this, I was like, is this okay? Like, this is weird to watch. It was kind of funny. They like served drinks in light up plastic martini glasses. And they had cherries on little skewers. It looked like a little like olive. Like you'd be at like a hotel bar, like sipping on a dirty martini. But it was like red. So I was like, I can only assume they're sipping on Shirley Temples, like they're cosmopolitans. And it was just so funny to see these like 16-year-olds just feel so I just remember being there so vividly, like being 16 and feeling like a grown-ass adult. So Natalie starts to get annoyed because there's too many people at the party dancing and she doesn't recognize them. So she ends up spending most of her night yelling at security to go hunt all the freshmen and get them kicked out. She said that some of the freshmen bought invitations for $50 each. So Mary, if you had known about this party and you were a freshman, which by my math, you'd be like in eighth grade, I think, would you have tried to buy one and sneak into this party?
Yeah, I was bad. I definitely would have.
Bad?
Oh, I was like.
Okay, wait. When you say bad, what do you mean by bad?
I was trying to figure out how to sneak out of my bedroom window and like disable the alarm without waking up my parents. You know, I was bad. Not real bad, but I definitely would have tried to get into that party for sure.
But like when you'd sneak out, what would you do? Like all anyone would do is like hang out at McDonald's. Like or like go to someone's basement.
Yes, but there was sometimes some, you know, activities and
canoodling,
some, you know,
some things in a water bottle that aren't water.
No lie, we would go sleep at my one friend's house. She had like this mansion, but there was like one door we'd have to exit to get where the cars were. And her mom brought a Lazy Boy chair every time we would have like a sleepover and sleep in the chair in front of that door every time.
I love that energy.
I know. I love her for it. They put up a good fight.
That's hilarious. Am I going to be that kind of aunt to my niece? Probably.
Kelsey's pulling up the Lazy Boy. And for a
my
long time.
Crazy guys just ignore her. So I thought you'd love this part, Mary. I found in my post-episode research that Natalie later revealed apparently Aaron Carter watched her episode and then reached out to her and they were, quote, talking.
This is devastating news because it was right about this time that I was in my own parasocial relationship with Aaron Carter. So, wow.
Literally was like, he's a nice guy, but who wants to be in a relationship during their senior year? Mary does.
I would have been interested.
So you're angry about who she could have been dating then. I'm angry about who she's dating now because Natalie now works at a production company where she met her current boyfriend, Henry Cavill. His name is Superman, the perfect male specimen.
I mean, he's hot. But did you see the Frenchie that is obsessed with him? And he flew her, the Frenchie, out to meet him at his premiere.
I mean, Mary, I can't know about this stuff. Like, I'm already deranged, obsessed.
Okay, I'm gonna, after we get off, I'm gonna send you the Frenchie's account.
It's the one that like gets excited when it sees his photos. Where I've seen the Frenchie, but I did not realize that he met it.
So I'm gonna send you a video later.
Well, now I'm literally turning green with envy. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that Natalie has a French bulldog because obviously I stalked the shit out of her on Instagram as soon as I found out she, like, everyone was like, who's Henry Cavill's new girlfriend? Oh my God, she's on my super sweet 16. I was like, what? That is insane. So my next favorite episode, moving on, this one is my favorite of all time.
Ooh.
The one, the only, Sophie Mitchell from Jupiter, Florida. So I need to be honest with you about something, Mary. I think about Sophie Mitchell once a week. Oh. Once a week. Unfailingly once a week. Because she delivered one of the most unhinged and equally iconic one-liners that my friends and I still recite to one another to this very day. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it. So Sophie's party was Moulin Rouge themed, which, oh my God, I just, right off the bat, I love that. Also insane for a 16-year-old.
I Googled her and I recognize her. Oh my God. I know exactly.
The polos.
Yes.
The two polos. Oh my God. And she also wore the most amazing Juicy collection. She and I had a very similar Juicy color palette, like the really bright green, the turquoise. Loved it. So Sophie, my girl, she handed out only 100 invitations, which were delivered via Rolls Royce. Well, literally everybody on the school looked on. And these invitations were not just like cute little cardstock with like a little illustration, maybe a can you dance, the little Moulin Rouge joke. No, they were an old school like feather fan. They were bright red and huge. So it was super obvious who was left out and who was one of the chosen few to be invited. So it's maniacal, but man, she's smart. She's trying to sell exclusivity and she is doing it well. So this is just like one of our first glimpses at how cutthroat young Sophie is, because she's giving out these invitations and she says that she rescinded some guy named Robert's invitation. Sorry to that man, because she invited him and then he dissed her 5 seconds later. Whoa. So she literally took his invitation and gave it to somebody else who wasn't on the list originally. Cutthroat. Nobody will disrespect Queen Sophie. And honestly, I really respect that energy. Like, don't let anyone walk all over you. That's what Sophie taught me. So then she proclaimed to a growing crowd who's eagerly wishing, hoping, praying to get a befeathered invitation. If you didn't get one, I'm sorry, but I don't know you. Sophie, oh my God, queen behavior. So we think it's over. We think, oh my God, that was insane. Like, I can't imagine not getting an invitation. I think I'd go home and cry if I was there. But right. That's not where this drama ends. No. So Sophie saw one of her friends, I'll put that in air quotes, a girl named Maggie. Maggie was holding an invitation. Again, these invitations were so obvious, you could spot it like a football field away. And it was like Sophie caught something in the corner of her eye and her pupils dilated. Like, she just went berserk. That invitation was one that Sophie apparently did not intend to give Maggie. So Sophie, to put it bluntly, lost her shit. And she delivered what I believe to be one of the most quotable quotes of this time.
Maggie, I don't want to listen to you, so I'm sick of you. I am tired of you. Do you want me to beat you out in front of all these people again, Maggie? Would you like me to get in a public fight with you again? Are you ready for that?
Do you want me to beat you out in front of all these people again, Maggie?
Oh my God, I remember that. I remember that.
Of course you do, because who wouldn't, Mary? Listen, I think about Maggie all the time. Her little smirk, she doesn't know what to do. Her friend is yelling at her. So Maggie, the blonde friend who gets yelled at, she's a realtor in South Florida. Mary, maybe you'll be one of her clients one day. Like, who knows?
Ooh.
She confirmed that this was a real fight. She said that she and Sophie had a fight earlier that day because Maggie was filming with Sophie and Maggie called Sophie out for acting differently in front of the cameras. And she had no idea that that altercation had led to her invitation being rescinded. Maggie has kind of like this weird smirk on her face. I was like, maybe she knew she wasn't supposed to get when she was being like sly about it. It was just so iconic. I'm so glad you remember that moment because
I'll never forget it. So our girl Sophie doesn't stop being iconic there. No, the iconic behavior continues. She had some amazing one-liners like, don't try to tell me the world doesn't revolve around me because today it does. Who doesn't want to say that on their birthday or like your wedding day? There are some days where the world should revolve around you, just so you know what it feels like. Her other one-liner that I love, the moral of this story is, I'm always right. You're so right, Sophie. You're so right. So Sophie's party, like, honestly, I like don't really pay that much attention to the party itself because just the lead up to it was my favorite thing about it. Her party featured can-can dancers. All her friends arrived in stretch limos. Her cake, according to some New York Times article, costs like $1,500, which now is like not that crazy. That's like an inexpensive wedding cake today. But I'm sure if I did some math for inflation, it would be insane. According to New York Times, her whole party cost $180,000. And you want to know what her mom does? She's a vet. So clearly I made the wrong career decision somewhere. She was also like really mean to her mom during the whole thing, as just seems to be a theme of these kids just like being awful to their parents. So shortly after this aired, Sophie became like an MTV villain. Like, you know how there was like those people that we all love to hate. Mm-hmm. She was receiving hate mail. So she reportedly moved to England to escape the ridicule.
I mean, isn't that all of our dreams? Just run off to Europe when the going gets tough.
I mean, even when the going gets easy, I want
yes,
to.
Yes, either or. Exactly.
So it's reported that she went to school in Switzerland and eventually earned a law degree. And now she lives in Florida as a lawyer. So in an interview with the New York Times, Sophie said that she wasn't proud of how she was portrayed, but that a lot of her behavior was put on for the camera. So, okay, Maggie had a point there. Hello. Right. But Sophie's mom also stood up for her a lot. And she was like, my daughter is sweet. She's loving. They obviously just cut the episode to show the juicy parts, but like, duh. So there's one more girl who I need to talk about, and her name is Ava. So Ava had the Arabian Nights themed party. So the reason why this one stands out to me, I don't remember much about her party except that Ava held auditions because for her grand entrance, she wanted to be carried in by a bunch of hot shirtless men.
Oh, I remember that.
My girl, we are too boy crazy to not have this episode be like a moment in our lives. She had auditions where these boys would show up and she would say, I want them to have a good body, sexy, cute. I can't imagine saying this at 15 years old. Like, I couldn't look a boy in the eye, let alone hold auditions for them to take their shirts off and then carry me into a room. I mean, I think that's why I like a weird part of me sort of like admired that part of these girls. Like, they just had so much confidence. Like, yes, they were also extremely arrogant and spoiled and like bratty, but I do believe that they were smart enough to play it up for the cameras, you know? Like, I think they were little business women is what I think. So this show obviously impacted us, but it also made a huge impact on pop culture at large. It was such a supernova that even in 2016, so Bryan Cranston did a spoof video on the Jimmy Kimmel Show for his 60th birthday. It was actually really funny. It was like, sweet 60. And he's like freaking out, yelling at his old elderly parents about like what he wants his birthday to be like. And there was also an MTV spinoff called Exiled, in which Super Sweet 16 alums were sent to remote locations to fend for themselves. Oh. Did you ever watch that? I didn't, but I'm sure it was hilarious.
No, I can only imagine the drama. The drama.
It kind of reminds me of like, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Or like, there's that show that I keep seeing clips all over my feed of right now. It's like Special Ops and like JoJo Siwa. There's this clip of her throwing the disgraced Tom Sandoval over her shoulder and like running with him.
Great.
That's what I envisioned Exiled was like. So those are my two favorite episodes, Mary. I am so glad that you remember them because I'll never forget them.
These were some great memes, Kels. Thanks for sharing. I hope you remember some of mine that I have lined up because I want to talk about Punk'd. Now, Punk'd first aired on MTV back in 2003, 20 years ago, and was created by Ashton Kutcher and Jason Goldberg, with obviously Ashton serving as the host of the show. Punk'd bears a resemblance to the classic hidden camera show, Candid Camera. Punk'd ran for 11 seasons and had 94 episodes. And the seasons that likely live rent-free in most of our minds are the first ones from 2003 to 2007 when Ashton was at the helm. And it's only 4 years, but we actually got a total of 8 seasons during that time period, which is indeed some longevity. So after 2007, the show went off air, and then after a 5-year hiatus, was revived with a March 2012 premiere. And the first episode of that 9th season featured Justin Bieber, it guy of the time, as a guest host. And the concept of the new season was that a different celebrity guest host would be featured each episode. So we had a season in 2012, but just one. It went off the air again, and then it came back again in 2015 on BET. But once again, that season only lasted 4-1.
However, oh my God.
I know. But Kels, did you know Punk'd is actually airing on the Roku channel now and has been since 2020 with Chance the Rapper filling the shoes of Ashton?
No, but I love Chance.
Well, you might want to give the show a chance because...
We love Chance because he did the Doritos Backstreet Boys commercial
for
the Super Bowl in 2019.
That's a great commercial. So I didn't even realize that, but the show is still going strong and has been for like the last 3 years now. But the history of the show is wild. So originally Ashton and MTV were developing a program called Harassment, a hidden camera show which featured pranks on every...
HR violation.
Right. Pranks on, and get this, pranks on everyday normal people. Like, first of all, can you imagine naming a show Harassment in this economy? Like, oh my God.
In this economy?
I know. And just like pranking the poor innocents of the world. Like, oh God, I just have the shivers. So this was like going forward back in 2002. But there was an incident involving a fake dead body at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. And the couple, this poor innocent couple who were targets of this dead body prank, sued Ashton, MTV, and the hotel for $10 million. So they were like, maybe this isn't the brightest idea we've ever had. So they went back to the drawing board and retooled the concept to involve celebrities. So a lot of celebrities have been featured on the show. Any guess what celeb has been punked more than the others?
Ooh, that's a good trivia question, Mare.
It's kind of weird.
Is it Justin Timberlake?
It is Wilmer Valderrama.
Oh, yeah, because that 70s show. That was going to be my second guess.
Yes.
Like someone from the show.
Random, but makes sense. But it should be unsurprising that the show had the potential to ruffle some feathers and maybe lead to some dicey situations. And there was a lot of potential violence that the producers had to deal with. So they set up a policy. If a weapon is brandished, the prank is shut down immediately. The gig is up. Reveal yourself. Joke's over. And apparently someone actually pulled a gun in a never-aired episode featuring the Black Eyed Peas. And a similar incident happened when they were punking Outkast. And in another example of things going too far, there's a Serena Williams episode. And the premise was she basically saw two kids getting kidnapped from a mall. And being the icon that she is, she literally got in her car and sped after the kidnappers, going over 100 miles per hour to keep up. Like, okay, she's a hero, even though it was staged. Like, if she would do that, like, she's a hero. Obviously, this is a show that had a lot of dicey situations where you never knew how someone was going to react. On the other hand, sometimes the punking didn't work at all. Ashton tried to punk Nick Cannon 4 times and never pulled it off, never got him. It took 3 times for him to get Neve Campbell. She caught him the first 2 times. And apparently he was mid-Simple Plan punk, and they spotted the camera and the whole skit was shot. There's a lot of celebrities that have been involved with this, and it's hard to deny the impact and the power that this show had. Like, the hottest celebrities could not escape involvement in the show. Ashton clearly had power and reach, and I think being punked was a sign that, like, you were in. You were a hot celeb, and you were someone worth punking.
If I didn't get punked and I was a celebrity, I would be so livid.
I know. It's like a sign of your like status. I truly believed it was a status.
A badge of honor.
Yes.
For sure. And it also just became like a part of our vernacular. Like anytime anyone did something, it'd be like, am I being punked?
Yeah. I feel like people still say that now.
Even just after that first season, it just immediately was a cultural mainstay. Reality TV wasn't really a thing, and we didn't have social media back then, so we rarely got to see celebrities in, like, outside of paparazzi photos where stuff was staged.
Yeah.
We didn't really have any glimpse of what their personalities were like during their free time. So it was just so fascinating for me to see what they were doing, how were they spending their time, like, on the weekends, right, what they were really like. You really get to see, like, who they are.
All right, so let's get into it. Let's start at the beginning. Let's start with the infamous season one, episode one, Justin Timberlake episode, since it's ranked on so many lists as one of the best ones ever. And I honestly wonder if that's because Punk'd was so new. Like, celebrities wouldn't be on guard for this type of thing because it literally didn't exist yet. But I digress. The premise for this episode is that basically federal agents are on Justin's property at his house, seizing all his property because he owes $900,000 in back taxes. And a reminder to set the stage, this is 2003. Justin is 22 years old. Brittany and him have been broken up for a year, and Justified has been out for a year. So this is just kind of where we are on the timeline of life. And the main federal agent is played by a very young Dax Shepard. Justin looks freaking terrified, but I mean, can you blame him? There's absolutely no reason for him to think that this is a prank. Like, he's legit breathing heavy. You can tell he's scared. And Dax is like, the house has been seized. It's now property of the federal government. And Justin's face, like, I mean, I honestly feel for him. And I realized when rewatching this that, like, these celebrities, these people, 1,000% trust the managing of their money to somebody else and just, you know, trust that everything is done correctly. So Justin really had no idea what he was talking about, to be honestly, because he obviously wasn't in charge of his money. But Dax references, like, oh, a ton of notices have been sent out to a Paul Harless, like, legitimately referencing Justin's dad. Like, the attention to detail was on point. And this part killed me. They go on to say that they've taken his dogs and they have been put in a government pound. And this is where they've, like, they would have.
Sounds insane now.
I know.
I believed it watching it. I was like, oh my God, they have one of those.
At this point, like, Justin understandably is, like, on the verge of tears. He goes, you took my dogs?
No, the dogs are put in a government pound and they'll be taken care of.
You took my dogs?
I mean, I would like to think this is where my common sense would have kicked in, but at 22 years old, who frickin' knows, like, if this was happening to me. But Dax makes some, like, funny comments that, like, clearly pissed Justin off. He's like, you're a young, handsome man. Like, I'm sure you'll be able to get your money back. Just kind of, like, egging him on. And, like, they tell him the teams are seizing his cars in Orlando, the properties in Memphis. And, like, all the property they've listed is definitely worth more than $900,000. But they just keep going and going. And then, like, they bring out Justin's guitar and they step a hole in it. Like, Justin's sitting there with on his steps with, like, his head in his hands. Like, he cannot believe it. And Ashton finally shows up. He obviously calls Ashton an asshole multiple times, but he seems like he's being a pretty good sport about this being a prank. I give him credit for that. Lynn, his mom, also shows up. She was seemingly in on it. At the end, the episode wraps with JT saying, it's shows like this one that shows you how stupid musicians are. Boom, roasted.
I thought this one was so funny. He clearly was so upset, like, genuine. This man looked gutted.
Yes.
But I remember reading something. He was talking about the experience, like, years later, and he was like, I was high out of my mind.
When Justin was?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And he was like, I had no idea what was going on. And it makes sense because when he's like, my dogs, and he's like crying.
My dogs.
Like, you took my dog. And also, like, this is extra conniving because this is a man who was ripped off by somebody else before. Hello, Lou Pearlman. Please revisit our Lou Pearlman episode. So, like, he probably has PTSD from this happening to him again.
What a great way to kick off the show. Season one, episode two, it continues. Also in 2003, obviously, we get Mandy Moore. This is a year after A Walk to Remember has come out. So she's definitely popping off. She shows up wearing a freaking Boston Bruins t-shirt, like, incredible. Don't know where the connection is there, but she just was, like, glowing and smiling and so freaking cute. Dax, again, is the main accomplice, and him and his girlfriend live in this, like, really dingy looking trailer. And The show Crib Crashers is the premise of this prank. I don't know if you remember this show, Kelsey. I don't. But apparently they fix up people's houses. And the real host of the show came on Punk to be a part of the prank, make it more believable. And so they're like going through the trailer and like talking about how they're going to fix it up. And it's like literally like a slum. And Mandy's in there. She's trying to be so polite. Like in this little dinky trailer, he says he bought this trailer on the internet. She's like, oh, wow. She was being like so kind. She was talking to the host and like the producer. She's like, is it even okay if he lives here? Yeah, so sweet. And she's like, oh, I think there's some like easy ways, like right off the bat, we can improve it. Like maybe some cleaning would be a good start. But she was like super polite about it.
I like the bathroom as is, but unless you guys had some better ideas.
There's definitely some we need easy to fix ways some, to improve it. Yeah.
Some of these things.
A little replacement, some color would help.
Maybe just a little bit of cleaning as well.
That would be a great start.
Yeah, you know, some Tilex up in here.
And Dax is like, well, if we can get this like looking good, I'm going to propose to my girlfriend. And Mandy's like, oh, we're going to do our best. I promise you. And then basically she like announces, let's go do Crib Crashers, and kind of like sticks her arm out. And like the prank is that like she gave like the signal that told the crane holding a sign that said Crib Crashers, like above this trailer. And apparently her hand motion like was the secret signal to the crane. Like they had like an
emergency. Yeah. And I remember this now.
Yes. And the sign fell down and completely demolishes Dax's pride and joy, this trailer. He's like, the ring is in there. And like Mandy is obviously in shock. She tries to comfort him and is soon alerted that this is actually all her fault because she apparently gave the signal to release the sign unbeknownst to her. And Dax is like, well, are you going to pay for this? And she's just like, and it doesn't go on for too long, though, because Ashton comes in via speaker announcing the punking. And Mandy gets a little rosy in the cheeks, but is a super good sport, definitely able to laugh at herself. And for me, this totally validated everything I've ever heard about her. It was awesome.
So sweet. She just seems like a genuinely sweet person. Oh my God, I remember this one now. Yes, so well.
Yes.
Also, do you think that are Ashton and Dax still friends?
I've wondered the same thing. I don't know.
Like, it's kind of crazy that this is how we met Dax. This is why he pepped.
Literally. But I have to move on to another season one gem, one that Kelsey is also very fond of herself. And that is the Kevin Richardson episode. This one is hilarious. Again, remember 2003. So this is post Black and Blue, but pre Never Gone. You guys knew we had to do a Backstreet Boys one. But Kevin thinks he has a meeting at this building. He has to go through some security to enter the building. Fair enough. Immediately, though, our Kevin sets off the alarm. He has to remove his belt, his shoes, and it just continues and spirals from there. Kelsey, you obviously remember that one.
Yeah, and I'll never forget how much I hated his outfit.
Jeans and black shirt?
Just jeans, Mary. They were so baggy.
Oh, were they?
So crazy baggy. Kevin has a gorgeous body. Why would you go? Like, why? I know it was the look.
It was.
Jesus. I didn't like it then. I don't like it now.
I didn't recognize the cohort in this one, but he did a great job as a security guard right away. He's like, you got to empty your pockets. Kevin's like, my pockets are empty, dog. Like, Papa Kev. And then the assistant prank punker is like, am I sensing an attitude, sir? And he's like, yes, you are. Like, definitely getting some Kevin spice this morning, which I was not expecting.
Spice, but I feel like his voice is so gentle that it never came off as like super rude. Clearly, they were trying to push him. I'm sure there was a lot that we didn't see.
True. Yet. There's a part where he has to get wanded down and the guy keeps telling him to spread his legs wider. He's like basically as close to a split as he can get, but not as split to get.
But he couldn't because his jeans were too baggy.
But he's as low as he can go. And they just have this footage of him getting wanded down with in this like half split. And then it keeps going off. And finally, the security guard's like, please drop your pants, sir. So Kevin's standing there in his black boxers. And they're like, okay, please go through the metal detector again. So Kevin, like any normal person, goes to pull his pants up. And the security guard, who again is hilarious, is like, with your pants down, sir. Like, obviously no sense with his whatsoever. So Kevin walks through the metal detector with his pants at his ankles. And oh my God, I was dying. And he keeps, you know, getting called back. And the security guard is like, you are obviously trying to conceal something, sir. And Kevin like looks at him appalled. He's like, I have a meeting. Like he just couldn't fathom what this man thought he was trying to conceal and sneak in. So then Ashton, you know, puts him out of his misery. He shows up to go through security too. Obviously he gets through with ease and Kev puts it together. He's like, wait, are you punking me, dog? And again, poor Kevin, he's like taking it all in, looking around, appalled. And the boys are on kind of a hiatus right now. So I wonder if he was just genuinely shocked that he was picked to be punked.
Right. So like you could tell in the later seasons when they'd catch Ashton, they'd immediately be like, oh my God, you got me. But in some of these earlier seasons, Ashton has to be like, hey, it's a joke. It's a joke. Like you just got punked. You see that the recognition when Ashton pops out isn't there. It's just confusion.
Yes, that is what it is. And this was one of my favorite to revisit, kind of a hidden gem. But there's also a Nick punking in season two where he hits someone in his yellow Hummer. The Arrow Hummers.
I hated his outfit in that one.
Oh my God. Wearing his do-rag and he was helping Ashton prepare a prank for Tommy Lee. And Ashton in his little sidebars is like, you think when you're on the set of Punk'd, maybe you got to be careful that someone's trying to punk you. But I decided not to overload the episode with BSB. And I just decided it was Kevin's time to shine. So moving on to another one in season one, we get Nick and Jessica. Again, another, I want to say banger, but just incredible episode for season one. This was spring of 2003. Jessica's album And the Skin was out. Newlyweds was on air. It first came out in 2003 as well. So they were probably also blowing up right at this time. This one is Jessica helping Ashton prank Nick. Dax, again, is a co-conspirator. Basically, the premise is Jessica's hick extended family, aka Dax, they've driven up in their RV to crash at the Lachey's new gorgeous mansion. And Nick's annoyed right off the bat. Like you can just tell Jessica's like, sweetie, be nice, they're family. And Dax right off the bat calls Nick Rick, which is hilarious. And this happens multiple times in this little episode.
Ryan here, he is a great singer. And we're thinking with what your connections and get at him with it.
I can be your hero, baby.
What's going on? What's up? I'm Dax. You Rick, right?
Nick.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, man.
And Dax has some great kind of one-liners. Like, we don't want to put you guys out, but you do sure have plenty of room. And you can just tell, like, Nick's jaw is clenched. He's, like, fighting the strain on his face. And he's like, you know what? Let me go speak to my wife and my mother-in-law, and I'll be right back. And, you know, you hear them talking. Jessica's mic'd up, but she's like, they found our house on Star Map.
Kidding me? You think I called them?
They found our house on Star Map.
Who let them up? Who let them up? I mean, I'm going to have somebody's ass to gate. Who let them up with that?
Oh my God. If you guys don't remember Star Map, it was like when you'd go to like LA or something and there would be actual tours of like where celebrities live. And there was like a map that like told you where they all lived. That's so creepy now that I
know. And the actor that plays Dax's son, so like Nick's nephew in this alternative universe, they come up to talk to Nick again and they're like, yeah, he wants to be a singer. And so this little boy sings Hero by Enrique Iglesias for Nick. And Dax is like, you know, with your connections, we figure we can get him in the singing career. And you just know Nick is like, are you freaking kidding me? Dax keeps saying, you know, blood is thicker than water. And Nick is like, I've never met you and we're not related. Like, what are you talking about it? And so
I don't know you. OK, so for family,
blood's thicker than Rick. We both married into this family.
My name is Nick. My name's not Rick. It's Nick with an N.
Finally, Nick offers to like help them. He's like, maybe we can help you out financially. And Dax is like, OK, I need a check for $5,000.
I want that check. We got the check.
I mean, I don't see any reason I can write you a check, Dax.
Listen, I want you to get your checkbook. You're writing a check or we're staying for good.
But like, what's so funny to me is that Jessica is like MIA this whole time. Like, if I was Nick, I'd be like, honey, this is your family. You please handle this. But no, it's Nick out here forced to deal with this craziness. So Dax is like continuously demanding a check over and over, getting kind of feisty with the homeowners association guy who's telling them they have to leave. And then finally, Ashton hops out of the RV. And I will say, Nick definitely seems a bit embarrassed. I get the sense he's not necessarily thrilled with this little pranking.
This one reminded me of like that Christmas Vacation show. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The Clark Griswold with a Chevy Chase.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that is that Christmas Vacation?
I'm pretty sure it's National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation when Cousin Eddie comes in like his trailer and is like really hicky. Crazy.
But the finale of season one is my favorite. And again, we're in 2003 and we have Miss Britney Spears. She's right on the verge of releasing her album In the Zone. And Britney is in there chomping her gum. She has like a hat on, pigtails. It's incredible. And her and Ashton have this agreement, apparently, that she cannot be punked. They talked about this at the start of the episode. I wouldn't be surprised if that was like actually true. Flary Rudolph hammered that into some sort of contract, but she was there to punk Busta Rhymes. Basically, that prank fell through, and then Britney pivoted with the help of the crew and tried to punk Ashton. So let's get into what happened here. Dax is there again as a co-conspirator, and the premise of Britney's attempted prank on Ashton is that Ashton shows up, and he's thinking that Britney has punked Busta. This prank that actually didn't end up happening went off without a hitch. And Ashton comes, and they're like, oh, yeah, it went great. It was so funny. The footage is great, blah, blah, blah. But Ashton immediately, as soon as he arrives, pulls Britney aside. His spidey senses are tingling. He's like, the crew's acting weird. The guys are acting weird. They're trying to punk me. Give it up. Tell me what's going on. And Britney's like, no, no. Like, I don't know. I don't know. And so he was like, you know what? They're going to prank me. And so you're going to help me prank them instead. So like, I'm riveted. I'm like, double agent Britney. Like, what team is she on? Like, does she know what team?
Conception.
I know. Like, does she know what team she's on? I don't even know. So they sit down to film these cutaway takes, you know, like talking about the prank with Busta that never happened. And the premise of Britney's prank was supposed to be that she went to Busta for help with her image. She's like, you know, I want to take a new direction with my career. I want to be, you know, Britney always wants to be more urban. That's her key word, right? And so she said she rapped a song, and she actually did this rap. It's incredible.
Feel it, okay?
Yeah, here they come, a kiss on my ass. Hey, we love you, Britney, sign 1,000 autographs. Please, just get to the point when you talk to me. And if a favorite gets involved, just rub my feet. Yeah, this business is and I want some fun. I want to sit at home and watch Dumb and Dumber. Psych, I take that back. I'm just tricking, you see? Because when I show my belly, everybody copies me. Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
Not that the cowards, but I'm just Britney Spears, and I got all this power. But the bottom line is, I don't even use it. Right when you become a bitch, that's when you lose it. So what if I do? What if I lose it all today? I've always got my friends to hold me out. But wait, happiness is the key, and love when you fall. Like Lauryn Hill said, if you can't get that, then get nothing else.
And she did it again for Ashton, and it was awesome. But Ashton is super edgy. He knows a prank is coming. He's like whispering with Britney on the sofa, and her security comes up and legit grabs Ashton hard and throws him across the room, basically for like whispering and being too close to Miss Britney Spears. And this was the prank that Britney and Dax were planning, like have her security go hard after Ashton, basically. He gets his ass kicked, though, no lie. Tony, the security guard, is pinning him on the floor. He's fighting back and screaming, fuck you. But I think this is when Ashton realizes that he's being punked. And this is when Ashton's prank comes in. He gets so upset that Jay, the guy that he co-produced the show with, he was like, you fucking tried to prank me. Season two is canceled. I'm not working with any of you ever again. Punked is done, and walked off the set. And Britney's like, yeah, he's really upset. He said punk is done. This is like, he never wants to see any of you guys again. And like, they seem to be buying it. So ultimately, Ashton comes out, reveals that he was punking the punkers and he wasn't that mad, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember seeing this one in that moment, but it was so fun seeing Britney in this environment. This was definitely a complicated one. And the whole time I was at the edge of my seat, I was like, who's punking who? Like, who's going to end up being the one punked? And I'm just grateful it wasn't Britney. She came out looking like a rose, and we heard an incredible rap from her.
Britney is such a good little actress. She never got enough credit for it.
No.
This just goes to show that people close to her were buying it. I thought this one was wild, and it like annoyed me that no one could get Ashton. Little shit.
I know. But man, I thought he was so freaking cute, like, and so funny. And I'm bummed that you know.
He's a horrible person.
Isn't that a bummer sometimes when it turns out that way?
It is a bummer. He was hilarious. This show was so funny and just so interesting to watch. Yeah. I sometimes think that I'm in situations where I'm like, am I on candid camera? Like,
where's Ashton?
Literally. Oh my God, that's in a movie. Have you seen Just Friends?
Oh my God, that's like one with of my favorite movies. Yes.
Isn't she like, am I being
done? Yes, where is Ashton? She was born for that role. She did such a great job.
We should do a holiday movie countdown, and that needs to be on it.
That one, yes, 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 yes. And Home Alone, please. And The Grinch, please.
Deeply in love with The Grinch.
Me, my soulmate. But okay.
5 o'clock, exercise.
All right, let's talk about a couple of favorites from season two. By the way, season one and season two are on Hulu. So if you want to revisit, it's easy. So season two, Hilary Duff. This is where we get that now creepy, infamous Ashton comment at the start of the episode where he's like, one of those girls that we're all waiting to turn 18. Like, ugh, it just didn't age well. What, Hillary is like 15 in this episode. She's pretty freaking young. It came out in 2003. This is the first episode of season two. So this is the same year as her release of Metamorphosis and the Lizzie McGuire movie. Get this, BJ Novak is the accomplice in this one. And again, crazy because I feel like he's super recognizable now. But at the time, I guess he wasn't. And this is all about Hillary getting her driver's license and taking her driver's test. And BJ is the one that takes her out for this driver's test. And right off the bat, says the car is not a toy about a million times. Driving is a privilege, not a right. So we're going to treat it as such. You know, he's just a hard ass nerd right off the bat. But he roasts her for driving in her heels and for wearing rings while driving. He's like, they are distracting you when you drive, like makes her take off all her rings. And to do that, they have to pull up to the stop sign and he tells her to put the car in park. They stop longer than normal. And this is what causes the punking, the road rage incident with the car behind them. They start honking and yelling at them. And so BJ gets out of the car. Imagine your driver's ed teacher doing this, like with a baseball bat. He's like, lock the door. And he throws his smoothie at the car and then hits it with his baseball bat and says that they should learn some respect, and then walks back to the car. And Hillary is like, holy shit.
Lock your door.
Oh my God, can this please not happen right now?
Just lock your door.
You don't have a problem.
It's got a bat, dude. It's got a bat. Hey!
What are you doing? What is that all about?
Learn some respect.
They like speed off and they pull off somewhere, and this road rage car catches up with BJ and Hillary, and BJ gets out of the car again, and this guy starts kicking his ass, seemingly. And Hillary's just sitting there, and they just keep showing her face, and her mouth is on the ground, like on the floor. And the other guy comes up to her window. So she's thinking that they're getting like legit mugged or something.
Yeah. And, I mean, she's famous.
And she's like, get out of the car, get out of the car. And so, I mean, what is she supposed to do? Not get out of the car. So she gets out of the car, and the guy drives off with the student driver car.
Get out of the car. Get out.
No, 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 no.
Get out.
Are you crazy? My purse is in there, in the car, and no, but I'm a student driver. This is not even my car.
She's like, oh my God, my purse was in the car. She said that like three times.
She was so pissed about her purse.
My purse. And BJ is like, you gave my car away. Like, he's like, it's your fault that it got carjacked.
Why did you let him take the car?
What am I supposed to do? He was threatening to kick my ass.
No, you were in the driver's seat. You're the one who let them take the car away.
Are you telling me that it's my fault that I got out the car?
It's your fault that our car got stolen. Why did you let him drive away our car?
Like, clearly isn't her fault. He went and threw a smoothie at the people, like hit their car with a baseball bat. And because Hillary like abided by the carjackers, he's like, this was all your fault. And he kept making these comments like, well, maybe with all your money, with your showbiz career, you can replace my car that you got stolen.
You work in the movies, right? You said that?
So you think because I have money, I'm just going to buy the car?
I'm not paying for it. See, that's your fault that the car got stolen, Hillary. Are you going to give a car away every time you drive? You gave my car away.
No, I didn't.
I use that for work.
Oh my God, I'm sorry, but it...
And she's just like, what? Like, I can just hear her voice. She's like, what? I didn't do this. Yeah. And she's like, yes. And then he's like, okay, well, why don't we walk back? It's only 3 miles.
You want to walk back?
block back.
Yeah.
I have heels on.
Well, you shouldn't have worn heels when you're driving. We'll be fine. We're like 3 miles away.
And so I was just like, what? But they start walking, and that's when Ashton shows up. And she was just like, are you kidding me? She seems super sweet. Like, again, a good sport about this, and was definitely able to laugh at herself. Another great one.
Yeah, I love this one. I cannot believe that no one knew who BJ Novak is.
I know. This next one that we're going to talk about, Caitlin Olson is one of the prankers, and she's Dee from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, I'm not as familiar with her. I was like, is she an Olsen sister?
No, yeah, I recognized her right away. And then, like, I saw another one, Bill Hader was the accomplice. And I'm like, oh my God, like, is this how all comedians got their start, like, on Punk?
Probably, yeah. Crazy. I mean, I wonder. Also, BJ Novak and Hilary Duff were just a funny pairing because, like, he's so short.
I know. It was perfect.
They just, like, looked funny together. Yeah. That made me stress out to get my driver's license, too.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was a good prank.
It was perfect because of the power dynamic. Like, she is a rich, famous 15-year-old, but there's one thing in this world she doesn't have, and it's her driver's license.
And she's at the mercy of this man.
Yes.
Yes.
This tiny, petulant man.
It was
trying
great.
To get money out of her.
So funny. But my last one is last but definitely not least is the Beyonce Christmas tree prank. Again, this is season 2, late 2003. Beyonce released her debut, Dangerously in Love, approximately 6 months prior to this, and was a young 22 at the time, just a baby. But the premise is Beyonce is supposed to put a Christmas star on a tree at this like charity event and ends up ruining Christmas and crushing all the gifts for these needy children who haven't gotten gifts for many, many years, apparently. God. As I said, Caitlin from Always Sunny is like the main accomplice in this. And she plays this like overzealous like teacher or something of the sorts. She does an incredible job. She starts right off when like Beyonce gets there. She's like, welcome, Beyonce. We've been waiting for her for 3.5 hours and she's finally here now. And Beyonce like legit visibly winces when she says this because it's just like, oh, like, why are you saying that? But Beyonce is glowing. She's humble. She gives a speech about why Christmas is so important to her. Does all the pictures with the kids, Santa. She sings Silent Night on demand at the podium. They hand her a doll baby Jesus to hold while singing. Like, it's really, she's taking all of this and with so much grace. And this was when Beyonce was still like a real person. Like, imagine getting this kind of Beyonce content and access today. Like, insane.
Mary, I dream about seeing her in the real.
She's not a real person. She's not. She goes up in this lift to go to this top of this big, big tree to put this handmade star out of pipes. It's made of like pipes. It's terrible. On this the top of this massive tree. And well, this is a tale as old as time on Punk'd. Beyonce knocks the tree over and it just is a big crash. Everything underneath it is crushed. And
she didn't even touch it.
Just like, it just looked like she did it, but she obviously did nothing. The kids are screaming, you ruined Christmas!
You ruined our Christmas!
People are like, wait, is there someone under there? Is someone hurt? She's like, oh my God. Like, her facial expressions, like, it goes from like terrified, feels terrible, panicked that someone's crushed under the tree. Some kids,
it's
like
a murder scene. This is an active murder scene.
Matthew Knowles is probably like off, like, you know, she's probably like, what is Matthew gonna do? Like, holy shit. Some kids like, did you do that on purpose? Like, she's so uncomfortable, understandably so. And they're like, why don't you go apologize to the kids? Like, again, oh, that's so painful. And they're like yelling at her like about ruining Christmas. And she goes over and apologizes and she promises new presents for the kids.
Yeah.
And like after all this, she's still being such a good sport. They demand she does more photo ops after this. And she's still being like yelled at and booed, basically.
And yeah, they were really like,
it was bad. And that's when we get the big reveal. And Ashton photobombs one of the photo ops. And of course, Beyonce is an incredible sport. She's laughing. She gives Ashton a huge hug and it's just radiating, all just Radiant. Beautiful. She's not radiating. She's radiant.
She's radiating goodness. Yes, atmosphere.
That too. And so that was the finale of season two. And it's just,
I felt so bad for her. Like, you could like watch her stomach drop as that tree goes down. Like, so does her face.
Oh yeah, the face. And
she's just like a little deer in headlights. I can't believe she was only 22. It's like hard for me to imagine her as like a little baby.
I know. They were all so young. Like, part of me is like, would I know that this is a prank? And it's like, I would hope so, but maybe not when I was, you know, 10 years younger.
I don't think I would have. There's too much going on in that moment. You're not thinking like, wow, am I being secretly recorded for a TV show right now? Like,
yeah.
All you're thinking is, wow, I just ruined Christmas for underprivileged like, children, and I might have killed one of them under this tree.
I'm going to have to go raid Toys R Us tonight. Like, here we go. Oh, God.
Toys R Us. Remember Toys R Us?
Oh, my God. Do I ever? That used to be my happy place way back.
R.I.P.
But that's all I had tonight.
Wow, Mary, that was an A+. You picked the best ones for sure. I'm glad you threw Kevin in there.
I mean, you think I could go through that and not do a Backstreet Boy? You should be. Look at the growth that I didn't do the Nick one.
I know the growth.
Well,
did you? I definitely feel like the Kevin one was funnier.
It was. Nick, yeah. It is. It is. Well, it's funnier for its own reasons. But I just love seeing Kevin get a little flustered. Like, you don't see that often. And I love it.
Yeah, you're right. Like, it is rarer.
Something about the yellow Hummer and that do-rag is just super nostalgic for me for some reason.
I'm not tattooed. Something about that Hummer and do-rag is really nostalgic.
It was.
Oh,
a warm blanket.
A warm blanket.
That is hilarious. But Kelsey and I have a special episode, not actually special at all, but a Thanksgiving-themed episode.
It's special?
But I don't want them to think we have, you know, like Britney coming on next week or something. Like,
I don't think anyone thinks that.
Well, that's,
I hate to burst your bubble.
Hey, dream big.
So yes, our next episode will be all about the good tidings of Thanksgiving, and we would have a lot of thanks to give if you would leave us 5 stars on your preferred platform.
That was a good one.
Thanks, Mary. And maybe like a nice comment or two and tell us how much you like to hear our voices. Listen, guys, it's been a week. We know that you're tired. We're tired. We're all tired. All you need to do is just stretch your little fingers for 15 more seconds and hit 5 stars, and we'll be forever grateful. Thank you guys so much for listening. We love you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.